all up with our English dead. In peace, there's nothing so becomes a man as modest stillness and humility. But when the blast of war blows in our ears, then imitate the action of the tiger. Stiffen the sinews, summon up the blood. Disguise fair nature with hard-favored rage. Then in the eye, a terrible aspect, let it pry through the portage of the head like the brass cannon. Let the brow overwhelm it as fearfully as doth a galled rock or hang and jutter his confounded base, swim with a wild and wasteful ocean. Now set the teeth and stretch the nostril wide, hold hard the breath, and bend up every spirit to its full height. On, on, you noblest English, whose blood is fit from fathers of war proof. Fathers that, like so many Alexanders, have in these parts from morn till even fought, and sheathed their swords for lack of argument. Dishonor not your mothers! Now attest that those whom you call fathers did beget you. Become me now to men of grosser blood, and teach them how to war. And you, good yeoman, whose limbs were made in England, show us here the mettle of your pasture. Let us swear that you are worth your breeding. Which I doubt not, for there is none of you so mean and base that hath not noble luster in your eyes. I see you stand like greyhounds in the slips, straining upon the start. The game's afoot. Follow your spirit. And upon this charge, cry God for Harry, England, and Saint. Yeah!
The humour of it is too much. That's the very plain song of it.
Plain song is most just, for humours to abound. Knocks go and come, confessors drop and die, and sodden shed in bloody field does when immortal fame.
If I were in an alehouse in London, I would give all my fame for a pot of ale and safety.
And I, if wishes would prevail with me, my purpose should not fail with me, but thither would I hie.
As duly, but not as truly, as bird doth sing on bough.
Up to the breach, you dogs! Turn out! You cunning!
Merciful great chief, to men of mould, obey thy rage, obey thy memory, obey thy rage, great chief, good boss, obey thy rage, you levity, how, sweet chief!
These big good humours, your honour, wins bad humours!
How?
As young as I am, I have observed these three swashers, and I am boy to them all three. But all they three, though they would serve me, could not be man to me. For indeed, three such antics do not amount to a man. For Bardolph, he is white-livered and red-faced, the means whereof he faces it out, but fights not. For Pistol, he hath a killing tongue and a quiet sword, the means whereof he breaks words and keeps whole weapons. For Nim, he hath heard that men of few words are the best men, and therefore scorns to say his prayers, lest he should be thought a coward. But his few bad words are matched with his few good deeds. He never broke any man's head but his own, and that was against a post when he was drunk. They would steal anything and call it purchase. Bardolph stole a loot case, bore it 12 leagues and sold it for 3 halfpence. Nim and Bardolph are sworn brothers in filching, and in Calais they stole a fire shovel. I knew by that piece of service that men would carry coals. They would have me familiar with men's pockets as their gloves or handkerchiefs, which makes much against my manhood. If I should take from another's pocket to put unto mine own, for it is plain pocketing up of wrongs. I must leave them and seek some better service. Their villainy goes much against my weak stomach, and therefore I must cast it up.
You must come presently to the mines. The Duke of Gloucester will speak with you.
To the mines? Tell you, the Duke, it is not so good to come to the mines. The mines is not according to the disciplines of the war. The calm cowardice of it is not sufficient to the adversary. You may discuss under the Duke, look, you know. He's digged himself 4 yards under the countermines. By Jesus, I think it will blow up all if it's not better directions.
The Duke of Gloucester, to whom the order of the siege is given, is altogether directed by an Irishman. A very valiant gentleman, if any.
Captain MacMorris, is it not?
I think it be.
By Jesus, he is the nastiest in the world. I'll verify as much in his beard. He has no more directions in the true disciplines of the war, the Roman disciplines, than in his a puppy dog.
Here it comes now. And the Scots captain, Captain Jamie, with him.
Captain Jamie is a marvellous, valorous gentleman, that is certain. And a great expedition and knowledge in the ancient wars. For my particular knowledge of his directions, by Jesus, he will maintain his argument as well as any military man in the world in the disciplines of the pristine wars of the Romans.
I say good day to you, Captain Fluellen.
Good end to your worship, good Captain James.
And now, Captain McMorris, have you quit the mines? Have the pioneers given off?
By Christ, lad, it's ill done. The workers give over, the trumpets sound the retreat. By my hand, I swear, and my father's soul, the work is ill done. Tis give over. I would have blown up the town, so Christ save me, lad, in an hour. Oh, tis ill done, tis ill done. By my hand, tis ill done.
Captain McMorris. I beseech you, will you vouchsafe me a few disputations with you as touching or concerning the disciplines of the war, the Roman wars, way of argument and friendly communication, partly to satisfy my opinion and partly also for the satisfaction, look you, of my mind, as touching the directions of the military discipline. That is the point.
It's to be very good faith, a good captain's bait. And I shall quit you with good love, and I may pick occasion, and that shall I marry.
It is no time to discourse, so Christ save me. The day is hot, and the weather, and the wars, and the king, and the dukes. It is no time to discourse. The town is besieged, and the trumpet call us to the breach, and we talk, and be Christ, do nothing. It is shame for us all, so God save me. It is shame to stand still. It is shame by my hand. And there is throats to be cut, and walks to be done, and there is nothing done, so Christ save me, lad.
And a mass. Are these eyes of mine take themselves to slumber or to good service, or I'll lick it in a grunt for it. Aye, or go to death. But I'll pay it as valorously as I may. That shall I surely do. And that's the breath and the long. Marry, I'd full fain heard some question between you two.
Captain McMorris, look you, under your correction, I do not think there is many of your nation.
Nation? Of my nation? What is my nation? He's a villain, and a bastard, and a knave, and a rascal. What is my nation? Who talks of my nation?
Look, you, if you take the matter otherwise than is meant, Captain McMorris, peradventure I shall think you do not use me with that love and affability as a discretion you ought to use me, look you. Being a good man as yourself, both in the disciplines of the war and the derivation of my birth, and in other particularities.
I do not know you, so good a man as myself. So, Christ save me, I will cut off your head,
gentlemen! Both! You will mistake each other!
Aye, a foul fault.
The town sounds a parley.
Captain McMorris, when there is more better opportunity to be required, look you, I'll be so bold as to tell you, I know the disciplines of the war. And there is an end.
How yet resolves the governor of the town? This is the latest parle we will admit, therefore to our best mercy, give yourselves. Or like to men proud of destruction, defy us to our worst, for as I am a soldier, a name that in my thoughts becomes me best. If I begin the battery once again, I will not leave the half-achieved half-fleur till in her ashes she lie buried. The gates of mercy shall be all shut up, and the fleshed soldier, rough and hard of heart, in liberty a bloody hand, shall range with conscience wide as hell, mowing like grass your fresh fair virgins and your flowering infants. What say you? Will you yield and this avoid, or guilty in defense be thus destroyed?
Our expectation hath this day an end. The Dauphin, whom of succors we entreated, returns us that his powers are not yet ready to raise so great a siege. Therefore, great king, we yield our town and lives to thy soft mercy. Enter our gates, dispose of us and ours, for we no longer are defensible.
Open your gates. Come, Uncle Exeter. Go you and enter Harfleur. There remain and fortify it strongly against the French. Use mercy to them all. For us, dear uncle, the winter coming on and sickness growing upon our soldiers, we will retire to Calais. Tonight in Harfleur will we be your guest. Tomorrow for the march are we a death.
Alice, tu as été en Angleterre et tu parles bien le langage.
Un peu, madame.
Je te prie, monseigneur, il faut que j'apprenne à parler. Comment appelez-vous la main en anglais?
La main, elle est appelée the hand.
The hand. Et les doigts?
Les doigts, ma foi, j'oublie les doigts. Mais je me souviendrai, les doigts, je pense qu'ils sont appelés the fingers. Oui, the fingers.
La main, the hand. Les doigts, the fingers. Je pense que je suis le bon écolier. J'ai gagné 2 mots d'anglais vitement. Comment appelez-vous les ongles?
Les ongles, nous les appelons the nails.
The nails. Écoutez. Dites-moi si je parle bien. The hand, the fingers et the nails.
C'est bien dit, madame. Il est fort bon anglais.
Dites-moi l'anglais pour le bras.
The arm, madame.
The arm.
Et le coude?
The elbow. The elbow, oui. Je m'en fais la répétition de tous les mots que vous m'avez appris dès à présent.
Oh, il est trop difficile, madame, comme je pense.
Excusez-moi, Alice. Écoutez. The hand. The fingers. The knives. Dharma. Et de Bilbo.
De Helbo, madame.
Oh, Seigneur Dieu, je m'en oublie. Delbo. Comment appelez-vous?
Le col. De Nick, madame.
De Nick. Et le menton?
De Tzin.
De Tzin. Le col de Nick, le menton de Tzin.
Oui, sauf d'honneur, en vérité, vous prononcez les mots aussi droit que les natifs d'Angleterre.
Je ne doute point d'apprendre par la grâce de Dieu et en peu de temps.
N'avez-vous pas déjà oublié ce que je vous ai enseigné?
Ah non, je réciterai à vous promptement. The hand, the fingers, the mice.
The nails,
the nice, dame, et de il vous.
Pour donner de il.
Ainsi dis-je. De Helbe, de Nick, de Sin. Oh, comment appelez-vous le pied et la robe?
Le foot et le coude.
Le foot et le coude. Oh, Seigneur Dieu, ils sont maudits, sont mauvais. Corruptible, gros et impudique, et non pour les dames d'honneur d'user. Je ne voudrais prononcer ces mots devant les seigneurs de France pour tout le monde. Le foot et le count. Néanmoins, je réciterai une autre fois ma leçon ensemble. The hand, the fingers, the knives, dame, the elbow. De Nick, de Sin, de Foot et le Comte.
Excellent, madame.
C'est assez pour une fois. Allons-nous à dîner?
Allons.
could not be stopped, my lord!
That I make any decision!
He has passed the River Somme. And if he be not forthwith all, my lord, let us not live in France. Let us quit all and give our vineyards to a barbarous people.
Oh, dear vivant, shall a few sprays of us, the emptying of our father's luxury, our scions, put in wild and savage stock, spurt up so suddenly into the clouds and overlook their grafters?
Normans, but bastard Normans!
Aye.
Norman bastards!
Don't
you, Mavi, if they march along on foot with all, but I will sell my dukedom to buy a slobbery and a dirty farm in that nook-sodden isle of Albion!
I breathe and honour, our madams mock at us, and plainly say our metal is bred out. And they will give their bodies to the lust of English youth to new store France with bastard warriors.
Oh, where is Montjoy the herald? Speed him hence. Let him greet England with our sharp defiance. Up, princes, and with spirit of honor, edge more sharper than your swords. High to the fields. Bar, Harry England, that sweeps through our land with pennons painted in the blood of our fleur. Go down upon him. You have power enough. And in a captive chariot into Rouen, bring him our prisoner.
This becomes the great. Ha! Sorry I am, his numbers are so few, his soldiers sick and famished in their march. But I am sure when he shall see our army, he'll drop his heart into the sink of fear and for achievement offer us his ransom.
Therefore, Lord Constable, haste on, Montjoy, and let him say to England that we sent to know what willing ransom he will give. Prince Dauphin, you shall stay with us in Rouen.
Not so, I do beseech your majesty.
Now be patient, for you shall remain with us. Now, forth, Lord Constable, and princes all, and quickly bring us word of England's fall.
Hello, Captain Llewellyn. Coming from the bridge.
I assure you those very excellent services committed at the bridge.
Is the Duke of Exeter safe?
The Duke of Exeter is as magnanimous as Agamemnon, and a man that I love and honor with my soul and my heart and my duty and my life and my living and my uttermost power. He is not, God be praised and blessed, any hurt in the world, but keeps the bridge most valiantly, with excellent discipline. There is an orchard lieutenant there at the bridge. I think in my very conscience now he's as valiant a man as Mark Antony. He's a man of no estimation in the world, but I did see him do his gallant service.
What do you call him?
He's called Ancient Pistol.
I know him not.
Captain!
Here is a man.
He beseeches to do me favors. The Duke of Exeter doth love thee well.
I praise God I have merited some love at his hands.
Barrow, a soldier, firm and sound of heart, a buxom valor, hath by cruel fate and giddy fortunes furious fickle wheel that got us blind, that stands upon the rolling restless stone.
And by your patience, Ancient Pistol, fortune is painted blind with a muffler afore her eyes to signify to you that fortune is blind. She's painted also with a wheel to signify to you, which is the moral of it, that she is turning and inconstant and mutability and radiation. And her foot, look you, is fixed upon a spherical stone which rolls and rolls and rolls. In good truth, the poet makes a most excellent description of it. Fortune is an excellent moral.
Fortune is Bardo's foe and frowns on him, for he has stolen a pax. An hang must be, a damned death. Let gallows gape for dog, let man go free, and let no hemp his windpipe suffocate. For Exeter hath given the doom of death for packs of little price. Therefore, go speak, the Duke will hear thy voice, and let not Bardell's vital thread be cut with edge of petty cord and vile reproach. Speak, Captain, for his life. And I will thee requite.
Ancient Pistol, I do partly understand your meaning.
Why then, rejoice therefore.
Certainly, Ancient, it is not a thing to rejoice at. For look you, if he were my brother, I would desire the Duke to use his good pleasure and to put him to execution. For discipline ought to be used.
Die and be damned. And a figure for thy friendship.
Why, this is an arrant counterfeit rascal. I remember him now. A board. A cutpurse.
I tell you what, Captain Gower. I do perceive he is not the man he would gladly make show to the world he is. If I find a hole in his coat, I will tell him my mind. Hark you! The king is coming! I must speak with him from the bridge! God bless your majesty!
and I threw an ink headstart from the bridge.
Aye, so please, your majesty, the Duke of Exeter have very gallantly maintained the bridge. The French is gone off, look you. And there is gallant and most brave passages. Marry, the adversary was, have possession of the bridge, but he is enforced to retire, and the Duke of Exeter is master of the bridge. I can tell your majesty the Duke is a very brave man.
What men have you lost, Fleury?
Well, the perdition of the adversary have been very great. Well, reasonable great. For my part, I think the Duke hath lost ever a man, but one has like to be executed for robbing a church. One Bardolph, if your majesty know the man. His face is all bubuckles and whelks and knobs and flames of fire. And his lips blows at his nose. It's like a coal of fire. Sometimes blue, sometimes red. But his nose is executed, and his fire is out.
We would have all such offenders so cut off. And we give express charge in our marches through the country. There'd be nothing compelled from the villages. Nothing taken but paid for. None of the French upbraided or abused in disdainful language. When lenity and cruelty play for a kingdom, the gentler gamester is the soonest winner.
You know me by my habit.
Well, then, I know thee. What shall I know of thee?
My master's mind.
Unfold it.
Thus says my king. Say thou to Harry of England, though we seemed dead, we did but sleep. Advantage is a better soldier than rashness. Tell him we could have rebuked him at Harfleur, but that we thought not good to bruise an injury till it were full ripe. Now we speak upon our cue, and our voice is imperial. England shall repent his folly, see his weakness, and admire our sufferance. Bid him, therefore, consider of his ransom, which must proportion the losses we have borne, the subjects we have lost, the disgrace we have digested, which in wait to re-answer his pettiness would bow under. To this, add defiance, and tell him, for conclusion, he hath betrayed his followers, whose condemnation is pronounced. So far, my king and master. So much my office.
What is thy name? I know thy quality.
Montjoy.
Thou dost thy office fairly. Turn thee back and tell thy king I do not seek him now, but could be willing to march on to Calais without impeachment. For to say the sooth, though 'tis no wisdom to confess so much unto an enemy of craft and vantage, my people are with sickness much enfeebled. My numbers lessened. And those few I have, almost no better than so many French. Who, when they were in health, I tell thee, Herald, I thought upon one pair of English legs did march three Frenchmen. Yet forgive me, God, that I do brag thus. This your heir of France hath blown that vice in me. I must repent. Go therefore tell thy master. Here I am. My ransom is this frail and worthless trunk. My army but a weak and sickly guard. Yet God before tell him we will come on, though France himself and such another neighbor stand in our way. There's for thy labor, Montjoy. Go bid thy master well advise himself. If we may pass, we will. If we be hindered, we shall your tawny ground with your red blood discolor. So, Montjoy, fare you well. The sum of all our answer is but this. We would not seek a battle as we are, nor as we are, we say we will not shun it. So tell your master.
I shall deliver so. Thanks to your highness.
I hope they will not come upon us now.
We are in God's hand, brother, not in theirs. March to the bridge.
It
now draws toward night. Beyond the river we'll encamp ourselves. And on tomorrow, bid them march away.
Tut, I have the best armor in the world.
Would it work day?
You have an excellent armor. But let my horse have his due.
Oh, it is the best horse of Europe.
Will it never be morning?
My Lord of Orléans? And my Lord High Constable? You talk of horse and armor.
You are as well provided of both as any prince in the world.
What a long night is this! I will not change my horse with any that treads but on four pastons. Sa! Ha! He bounds from the earth as if his entrails were hairs. Le cheval volant, the Pegasus, chez les narines de fer. When I bestride him, I soar. I am a hawk. He trots the air. The earth sings when he touches it. The bassest horn of his hoof is more musical than the pipe of Hermes.
He's of the color of the nutmeg.
And of the heat of the ginger. It is a beast for Perseus. He is pure air and fire. And the dull elements of earth and water never appear in him, but only in patient stillness when his rider mounts him. He is indeed a horse, and all other jades you may call beasts.
Indeed, my lord, it is a most absolute and excellent horse.
It is the prince of palfreys. His neigh is like the bidding of a monarch, and his countenance enforces homage.
No more, cousin.
Nay. The man hath no wit, but cannot, from the rising of the lark to the lodging of the lamb, very deserved praise on my palfrey. It is a theme as fluent as the sea. Turn the sands into eloquent tongues, and my horse is an argument for them all. It is a subject for a sovereign to reason on, and for a sovereign to ride on, and for the world, familiar to us and unknown, to lay apart their particular function and wonder at him. I once writ a sonnet in his praise, and began thus. Wonder of nature.
I have heard a sonnet begin so to one's mistress.
Then did they imitate that which I composed to my courser. For my horse is my mistress.
My Lord Constable, the armor I saw in your tent tonight, are those stars or suns upon it?
Stars, my lord.
Some of them will fall tomorrow, I hope.
Yet my sky shall not want.
That may be, for you bear a many superfluously, and to a more honor some would away.
Even as your horse bears your praises, who would trot as well were some of your brags dismounted.
Would I were able to load him with his dessert. Will it never be day? I will trot tomorrow a mile, and my way shall be paved with English faces.
I will not say so, for fear I should be faced out of my way. Yes, I would it were morning. I would fain be about the ears of the English.
Who will go to hazard with me for 20 prisoners?
You must first go yourself to hazard ere you have them.
Tis midnight. I'll go arm myself.
The Dauphin longs for morning.
He longs to eat the English.
I think he will eat all he kills.
By the right hand of my lady, he's a gallant prince.
Swear by her foot that she may tread out the oath.
He's simply the most active gentleman of France.
And doing his activity, and he will still be doing.
He never did harm that I heard of.
No, we'll do none tomorrow. He'll keep that good name still.
I know him to be valiant.
I was told that by one who knows him better than you.
What's he?
Marry, he told me so himself. And he said he cared not who knew it.
My Lord High Constable. The English lie within 1,500 paces of your tents.
Who hath measured the ground?
The Lord Grand Pré.
Most expert and valiant gentleman.
Would it were day! Alas, poor Harry of England. He longs not for the dawning as we do.
What a wretched and peevish fellow is this King of England, to mope with his fat-brained followers so far out of his knowledge.
If the English had any apprehension, they would run away.
Oh, that they lack. But if their heads had any intellectual armor, they could never wear such heavy headpieces.
That island of England breeds very valiant creatures. Their mastiffs are of unmatchable courage.
Then shall we find tomorrow they have only stomachs to eat and none to fight.
Now, is it time to arm? Come, shall we about it?
It is now 2 o'clock, but let me see, by 10, we shall have each 100 Englishmen.
Now entertain conjecture of a time when creeping murmur and the pouring dark fills the wide vessel of the universe. From camp to camp, through the foul womb of night, the hum of either army stilly sounds, that the fixed sentinels almost receive the secret whispers of each other's watch. Fire answers fire, and through their paly flames each battle sees the other's umbered face. Steed threatens steed in high and boastful neighs, piercing the night's dull ear. And from the tents, the armorers, accomplishing the knights with busy hammers closing rivets up, give dreadful note of preparation. The country cocks do crow, the clocks do toll, and the third hour of drowsy morning name. Proud of their numbers and secure in soul, the confident and overlusty French do the low-rated English play at dice and chide the crippled, tardy-gated knight who, like a foul and ugly witch, doth limp so tediously away. The poor condemned English, like sacrifices by their watchful fires, sit patiently and inly ruminate the morning's danger, and their gesture sad, investing lank lean cheeks and war-worn coats, presenteth them unto the gazing moon so many horrid ghosts. Oh, now, who will behold the royal captain of this ruined band walking from watch to watch, from tent to tent? Let him cry, praise and glory on his head, for forth he goes and visits all his host, bids them good morrow with a modest smile and calls them brothers, friends and countrymen. Upon his royal face there is no note how dread an army hath enrounded him, nor that he dedicate one jot of color unto the weary and o'erwatched night, but freshly looks and overbears attaint, with cheerful semblance and sweet majesty, that every wretch, pining and pale before, beholding him, plucks comfort from his looks. A largesse universal, like the sun, his liberal eye doth give to every one, thawing cold fear, that mean and gentle all behold, as may unworthiness define, a little touch of Harry in the night. And so our scene must to the battle fly, where, oh, for pity, we shall much disgrace with 4 or 5 most vile and ragged foils, right ill-disposed, in brawl ridiculous, the name of Agincourt. Yet sit and see, minding true things by what their mockeries be.